This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Leaves Home for the Forest, text number 1. Maitreya Vacha Sanak Adya Naradascha Vibharham Shorunir Yati Naite Grihan Brahmasuta Yavasan Urdvareta Shaha. Translation: the great sage Maitreya said, the four great Kumara sages headed by Shanaka, as well as Narada, Ribhu, Hamsa, Aruni, and Yati, all sons of Brahma, did not live at home, but became Urdvareta, or Naishtiki Brahmacharis, unadulterated celibates. Purport: the system of Brahmacharya, has been current since the birth of Brahma. A section of the population, especially male, did not marry at all. Instead of allowing their semen to be driven upwards, they used to lift the semen. Instead of allowing their semen to be driven downwards, they used to lift the semen up to the brain. They are called Urdva Reta Shaha, those who lift up. Semen is so important that if, by the yogic process, one can lift the semen to the brain, he can perform wonderful work. One's memory is enabled to act very swiftly, and the duration of life is even increased. Yogis can thus perform all kinds of austerity with steadiness and be elevated to the highest perfectional stage, even to the spiritual world. Vivid examples of brahmacharis who accepted this principle of life are the four sages, Shanaka, Shananda, Shanatana, and Shanat Kumar, as well as Narad and others. Another significant phrase here is Naiti Grihan Yavashan. They did not live at home. Griha means home as well as wife. In fact, home means wife. Home does not mean a room or a house. One who lives with a wife lives at home, otherwise a sannyasi or brahmachari, even though he may live in a room or in a house, does not live at home. That they did not live at home means that they did not accept a wife, and so there was no question of their discharging semen. Semen is meant to be discharged when one is at home, has a home, a wife, and the intention to beget children. Otherwise, there is no injunction for discharging semen. These principles were followed from the beginning of creation, and such brahmacharis never created progeny. This narration has dealt with the descendants of Lord Brahma from Manu's daughter, Prashuti. Prashuti's daughter was Dakshayini, or Sati, in relation to whom the story of the Daksha Yajna is being narrated. Maitreya is now explaining about the progeny of the sons of Brahma. Out of the many sons of Brahma, the Brahmachari sons, headed by Shanaka and Narada, did not marry at all, and therefore there is no question of narrating the history of their descendants. I think this is going to be a class for Dina Dayal. Essentially, this verse is about brahmacharya. Not just student life, but as Prabhupada points out, celibate student life. Brahmacharya is the first stage of life for the boys in the system of varnashram dharma. It lasts from the age of 5 to 25 of one's life. And during this time, the brahmachari lives in very close proximity to his guru, to his spiritual master, so that he learns not only the theory, but the actual practice of spiritual life. Theory is one thing, practice is another. Theory we can get from the books, but the practice of devotional service we learn in the association of the spiritual master. And for the disciple, what better association is there than the spiritual master? for learning the science of Krishna consciousness. So the young boys would leave home. Mothers would raise them from 1 to 5, and then one day she would drop him off at the ashram where he would live for 20 years. And after this stage, if the student wanted, he could enter into the Grihastha ashram at 25. So it appears the boys married at 25 after they finished their studies. Girls were married much younger. We actually read in the Bhagavatam that often girls were married when they reached maturity around 12 or 13 years of age. But boys, they would study to be prepared to accept the responsibility of Grihastha life, to raise children and give protection, association, enlightenment to the wife, to give a strong foundation to culture, because of course most people, Prabhupada said, all the ladies and most of the men will be in the Grihastha ashram. So it's the foundation, you could say, of the Vedic culture in that sense. The Grihasthas are actually maintaining, you can put it that way. The Grihasthas are working, and their dhan, their charity, which is their duty, not that they keep everything, but some percentage of their hard-earned wealth is given for higher purpose of Krishna consciousness. So they would maintain the brahmacharis, who were renounced. They would maintain the vanaprasthas, who were renounced, and they would maintain the sannyasis, who were renounced. But to be good grihastha, one had to first of all be good brahmachari, which basically meant study in the ashram of the spiritual master. Of course, as Prabhupada points out here, some of those brahmacharis chose to remain celibate. The choice was there. Actually, I believe it was up to the guru, because the guru could see the mentality of the disciple, and he would direct him in his varna and his ashrama. So some of the boys, a certain percentage, would remain celibate, certainly more so in those days than these days. Later in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj gives very valuable instructions to the brahmachari. First of all, he says that one should begin training in Krishna consciousness at that age, at that very young age. He says, Komara acharet prajno, dharmam bhagavatam iha. Famous verse. One who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. So he notes that the age of 5 is very tender. You look at a 5-year-old boy, his skin is tender. And he's simple, naive, playful, like that. Tender. But the education begins at that time. Why? Because that's when the intelligence awakens. Before 5, the body is growing, and at 5, the intelligence starts growing. I think the parents here, we have parents, the parents will tell us that at round 5, you know, the boys start getting naughty. I don't want to push this too much with Vara's sons, but probably around 5, Vara, they started getting, they're intelligent, they know how to do things and get in trouble. So that intelligence is harnessed and it's directed, it's given direction. Eke kuru nandana, with one pointed attention, one is directed towards the Supreme Personality. Because the mind, as we see in our play, the mind can be all over the place. Here, there, chanchala, everywhere. And Arjuna complains to Krishna, it's as difficult as controlling the wind to control the mind. But Krishna says it's possible. It's possible to control the mind if you remain detached and engaged in Krishna consciousness. Possible. So before the intelligence gets way out of control, and you know, after 18 or 20 years, you try to become a student, a brahmacharya, then you really have to control the mind. Start from the beginning at 5. Just when it awakens, capture it, train it. It's like the lions that they have in the circuses. Most those lions didn't come from the wild. Those lions were little tiger cubs. They were born. Most of them were born in the zoo. And you see how cute they are. A few days ago, I saw on the internet some white lion cubs were born in some zoo somewhere. They're so cute. You want to take them and hug them, play with them. They're so cute. They'll grow up to be ferocious lions. But if you train them from the very beginning, they'll still be lions, but they'll be controlled lions. They'll jump through the hoop of fire. Animals are terrified of fire. But if you train them from the very beginning, even a lion, his natural enemy is fire. Because in the forest, his natural enemy is man, who's destroying the forest. But originally, their original enemy was fire, because if there was fire, they had nowhere to go and they would burn up. But you can get a tiger to jump right through the hoop of fire if you train him from the beginning. You can get them to eat out right out of your hand. You train them, they do a trick. If they do it right, they get some meat. If they do it wrong, they don't get anything. So they learn. They get trained like this. Even the wildest animal can be made domestic by food and training. It's like Prabhupada tricked us with food and training. We were wild boys and girls, but he trained us in proper Vedic life. So the intelligence is just beginning. So you rope it in. You send them to the Gurukul, and they begin to hear spiritual knowledge. Even in modern society, children start education around 5, 6, or 7. But most important is the spiritual knowledge. Rajavidya, rajaguyam, pavitam idam uttamam, patyaksha vagamam dharmyam, shushukam kartam avyayam. What a verse. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of secrets. It is the purest knowledge. And because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. What a privilege to have such nectar flow from our lips. Of course, material education is also required. The yin-yang, it's the balance. But that knowledge only earns us a livelihood in this world. Such knowledge teaches us to live in this world, but rajavidya, rajaguyam, it teaches us to get out of this world. So although both are important, one is essential. We don't decry materialistic education. We used to in the beginning when we were just, you know, we were new to Krishna. Yeah, they're like that. But we soon realized that when the brahmacharis got married and they had to work to be responsible, they needed an education. So a lot of devotees went back to school to get an education. So we realized how important it is to get a good education. I'm so often encouraging my own disciples to, you know, at least finish high school, go into college, and get a degree in something that you can always fall back on in hard times. You never know. Both the men and the women. Education is so important. It's a long life, 70, 80, 90 years. What you learn in your youth will be put into practice throughout your life. But, again, essentially, that just takes us up to the point of death. But spiritual education, that's forever. They have this kind of misnomer. You know, they advertise it. I saw it in Harinam the other day. Went past a jewelry shop, and there was some diamonds, and it said, give her diamonds because diamonds are forever. What? Well, they do last a long time, but you can only hold on to them for a little while. What lasts forever, Krishna says, whatever advancement you make in this lifetime, then you take off where you left off. So knowledge is so valuable. Therefore, when Gaurahari said yesterday, well, You know, today's, we just have Harinam in the evening. What are the devotees going to do all day? You know, how are we going to engage them? My mind just thought, well, geez, sit down and chant. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Or read the Bhagavatam. I didn't say that, but he was thinking of going to the beach or a bushwalk, and I'm thinking, yes, all right. That's nice, but what about some free time and just diving into the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavatam, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is free time. Probably, if you've got time, chant Hare Krishna. No, I'm not against bushwalks. I also want to go on a bushwalk. But my point is, what is our most precious commodity? What actually frees us from the entanglement of this world, which is the source of our suffering? It's knowledge. And we have that knowledge at our fingertips. Just pull a book off the shelf and read. So inspiring. But one knowledge takes us, helps us. Knowledge is a friend. It makes life tolerable. Probably said the best use of a bad bargain. So we utilize that knowledge. It's necessary. But essential is that knowledge which takes us beyond the shores of birth and death. And to do that, you should start at 5 with intelligent. It's not too early. Someone said to me the other day, but that's, you know, 5? Start reading. What do they realize at 5 years old? Not much, but you can memorize a lot of shlokas. Now, for me to memorize a shloka, I won't even tell you how long it takes. But when you were young, I memorized all the presidents of the United States of America. I memorized all the capital cities of America. I memorized so many things I don't even draw upon now. All the great generals of the Civil War. Now I get them all mixed up, the Confederacy, the Union. I get them all mixed up. So there's a different duty at different parts of life. Youth is for study. It's not for frivolity and abusing and exploiting the senses. And it's for sitting down and studying material and spiritual knowledge. As regards spiritual knowledge, the science of the soul, Krishna says, of sciences, I'm not the science of thermodynamics. I'm not the science of the atom. I'm not the rocket science. He said, I am science. I'm the science of the self. He says it himself in the Gita. And to understand that science takes how long? A lifetime. Or many lifetimes. Vasudeva Sarvameti Samahatma Sudurlabaha. After many, many lifetimes, one who is in full knowledge, Krishna says, surrenders to me. It takes, you know, to get a degree in psychology, it takes 3 to 4 years. Or any PhD, it's actually, you have 4 years of university and 2 years added on for a master, 2 more years for a PhD if you want to become you're by 35 or 40 when you graduate. And you think, I've studied so long. Yes. But you haven't studied the science of all sciences, the science of the soul. That takes a lifetime. So you have to start, as soon as the intelligent wakes up, boom. Someone was Kavita's son, her grandfather, Sundarananda Gopal, told me. The first word out of his mouth was, Prabhupada. First word. Time to go to Gurukul. I don't think he's 5 yet. Anyway. Of course, a young brahmachari doesn't know so much. He memorizes the verses. He doesn't really realize the meanings. The meanings are understood or realized by putting the knowledge into practice. Tadvidi paripatena pariprasana sevaya upadekshanti teganam ganinach tattva darshana. Just try to learn this truth, the spiritual science, by approaching a spiritual master. Pariprasana, inquire from him submissively. Sir, kayami, who am I? You are not the body, you are the soul. Here's some instructions to realize that. Part of sevaya, and you serve. And by serving that instruction, by putting that knowledge into practice, comes vigyan. oh, now I understand. The light bulb, and that, you know, you see in those drawings, the light bulb comes on. This knowledge is realized by putting it into practice under the expert guidance of the spiritual master. That is a science. It's not like mundane knowledge which you learn by sitting down and memorizing and going over it, and the test comes and then you write, you go outside and play football and what. This knowledge is applied. You put it into practice, and by mercy, coming down through Guru Parampara, by mercy, the submissive student, inquisitive, submissive student, it's not a material phenomenon. It's mystical. Krishna consciousness is mystical, how it all happens. The Mukunda Mandaka Upanishad also stresses the importance of applying the knowledge that one gets in the Gurukul in service. Tad viginatam sagurum eva bhikachet samitpanishrotaryam brahmanishtam. To learn transcendental subject matter, one must approach a spiritual master. In doing so, he must carry fuel to burn in the sacrifice. It's not that we just sit in the classes. No, active. You have to be active, active life. In the Krishna book, we learn how Krishna and Balaram lived in the Gurukul and took instruction from Sandipani Muni. And as part of their training in submissiveness or humility to realize the knowledge, Krishna and Balaram would go to the forest and they would gather wood. It's not really a very easy task. Nowadays, you go down to the supermarket and you get your wood. It's all packaged and you come home and you put it in your fire. Well, maybe those days are coming to a close also because it's getting more tough out there. Maybe the day is coming when people will have to go out in the bush, not for a walk, but to gather wood, to cook, to live and survive. Those days may be coming. The writings on the walls. Writings on the walls. And that service attitude, that pleased the spiritual master. The service attitude. Actually, unless one is humble, he cannot hear properly. Menial service makes one humble. And unless you're humble, you can't hear and absorb and realize the knowledge. What's the opposite of humility? It's pride. And if one is proud, he thinks he knows everything, so what does he need to hear from anybody for? Today, anybody and everybody has authority on everything. So that's why it's so hard to preach. So, what do I need that? People, they may not say, I know the gift, but what do I need that for? They think they're such an authority. It's so hard nowadays to preach genuine spiritual knowledge because people already think they're an authority. That's a famous story, the violin teacher, that there were a lineup for the teacher opened a school of violin, and the first boy in line, the teacher said, so how much do you know about violin? Oh, I don't know anything. Oh, $10 for your lessons. The next boy in line and came, and the teacher said, so how much do you know about violin? Sir, I taught myself violin 5 years ago. So the teacher said, well, for you it's going to be $500 a lesson. What? The first boy was only $10 a lesson. You're charging me $500? I know so much. The teacher said, yes, that's the problem. You're self-taught, so I have to spend so many years unteaching you before I can begin teaching you the real thing. So it's going to be greater endeavor. So humility is required. We have to practice being humble. We may not be humble, but if we practice, practice makes perfect. We accept menial services. So in the Gurukul, the student would learn spiritual knowledge and serve the Guru. And then Prahlad gives more instruction. There's lots of instructions for brahmachari in the Bhagavatam. And grihastha, and vanaprastha, and sannyas. You choose that path which you feel most comfortable with, and you fight the lioness of maya. Brahmachari guru kule prashandanto guru hitam acharan dashavan nicho guru shudvita shoritaha. A student should practice completely controlling the senses. He should be submissive and should have an attitude of firm friendship with the spiritual master. With a great vow, The brahmachari should live in the gurukul only for the benefit of the guru. So here's a young brahmachari teaching how to be brahmachari from the mouth of a child, as Jesus said. He says, with a great vow. So what is that great vow? That great vow is the essence of the purport today. Celibacy. That is the greatest vow because it's the most difficult thing. It's the greatest challenge. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy in this world. Prabhupada put it more in modern terms. This lust, he said, is public enemy number one. They are thinking that Osama bin Laden is public enemy. No. Public enemy number one is our material desires, which really, the cardinal sin is this sex desire. It has to be controlled, if not extinguished. So it's the greatest challenge. So therefore, celibacy is the most difficult thing, and therefore it's the greatest vow. There was once a king who desired a, Mahabharata is described a king, his name Balan, who desired a second wife, Devadatta's father. Santanu, King Santanu, the father of Devadatta. So he had wife and he had son, but kings could have more than one wife. So one day he was hiking. The seventh day of my fast on water, so I'm getting a few. Remember, King Santanu. King Santanu, he was not hiking. He was hunting in the forest. He wasn't on a bushwalk. And he saw one very beautiful girl while hunting. And she was the daughter of a sage. And this is the way, I guess, the kings would sometimes acquire their wives. So the king went to her father, and he asked for her hand, but the king refused. He said, no, sage said, you already have a queen, and you already have one son, so naturally, you know, your son's going to be the next king, and that way your dynasty will go on. Therefore, my daughter will be very upset, because if she marries you, then if she has children, her son will be second in line for the throne, and maybe he'll never, my daughter will be very disappointed, so I'm not into this. So the king was very disappointed. He went home and he was lamenting. When his son, the future king, heard about this, he went and he felt some compassion for his dad, for his father. He said, don't worry, father. You can marry the new girl because I promise that I will take a lifetime vow of celibacy. I will remain brahmachari. I will not marry and have any children. As soon as he said that, the whole heavens opened up. And flowers began raining from the sky. So today it's raining here in Sydney. Raining and Bhishma, Bhishma, Bhishma. The demigods gave him a new name. It's another way you can get a new name. One who has taken a terrible vow. So, for the demigods, that's a terrible vow because demigods are prakriti bhaktas. They have mixed motivation. They don't hide it. They don't hide it at all. They have they're devotees of Krishna, but they have very overt material desires. I mean, you read about the heavenly planets, what goes on, we won't go into detail. What goes on up there is a saras, they call them society girls, a polite way of saying prostitutes. Society girls and beautiful lakes and streams and flowers and this and that, all for enjoyment. They're not ashamed. One time Prabhupada said in a class in Los Angeles, he said, 75% of my disciples are aspiring for the heavenly planets. So, yeah, we have to overcome that. So they accept that and they're making their progress in small increments. Back to this verse. They do their yajnas and they have their rules and regulations and so forth and so on. But there's, you know, there's that. So they consider that celibacy a terrible vow. And materialists may think, oh, that's also a terrible vow. But Vaishnavas, brahmacharis, grihastras, vanaprastas, and sannyasis, they don't think that's a terrible vow. They're seeing that as the, how does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? Regulative principles of freedom. That's a wonderful way to describe it. The vows that we follow, they're not constraining and limiting us and cheating us and not allowing us. No, we think of them as the regulative principles of freedom. By abstaining, we were able to go deeper. And by going deeper into Krishna consciousness, one day we'll be liberated from this material world. Of course, it's a gradual process. Therefore, the choice was there. The brahmachari could choose to remain celibate, but because it's a very, very difficult thing to do, he could choose to marry and with his wife have sex for the purpose of procreation and gradually renounce and reach the goal. For most men and women, that is actually the gradual process. Having a goal in mind, I'm not at that goal yet, but I have confidence that by following the process of Krishna consciousness, gradually, I'll lose my material desires, and by the end of this lifetime, I'll be able to fully embrace the lotus feet of Krishna. So it's a gradual process. Again, we're speaking about brahmacharya life here. Maybe tomorrow we'll have a householder class. But we have to speak according to the purport, so what can we do? So the brahmacharis, actually there's four vows of celibacy in student life. One is called savitra. It means after initiation, the sacred thread ceremony, one has to observe celibacy for 3 days. There's a path for everyone to follow. One shouldn't feel discouraged. Oh, I can't. No, you can do. There's room for everyone. But some vow must be there. So savitra means after initiation, the sacred, you remain celibate for 3 days. Prajapatya strictly observes celibacy for at least one year after initiation. Brahmachari observes celibacy from the time of initiation up to the time of completion of his studies in the Vedic literature. Then he marries. And Naishthiki remains celibate throughout his whole life. Very rare. Actually, that's what this verse is about. So it's a little difficult to speak and keep the devotees enthusiastic. Not appear fanatic. No, there's room for because everyone has different levels of spiritual advancement. So that it's a wide spectrum here. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was Naishthiki. And what does Naishthiki mean? Well, Prabhupada speaks very graphically here. He says Naishthiki means that one never spills the semen. He says the semen can be used for procreation. Such a powerful thing. It can create life. It doesn't really create life, but it facilitates the whole process of birth into this way. It's quite an amazing phenomenon. Or it can be lifted to the brain. They do the yoga and the kundalini, the yoga, the semen would go to the brain, the energy, and the brain, man would become very intelligent, lost science. And because of that, a Naishthiki could remember so many things, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was able to remember every word of every line, of every passage, of every book he'd read from 5 years on. So they're very careful to protect the seminal fluid. And therefore, they make a difficult decision. It's not easy, because everyone who takes birth has desires. You wouldn't be in this world unless you had desire. So they make a very difficult decision. Very difficult decision. I will refrain. And some don't make it. We read in the Bhagavatam, somebody. Those who are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they have the easiest chance. Because they're always in association of other loving devotees, and they get the higher taste. They don't have to wait many lifetimes like the yogis or the gyanis. They get the taste from chanting Hare Krishna. They know about divine love. They give up mundane love for divine love, for loving Radha and Krishna. It's easier. Some men may choose brahmacharya and remain aloof from the association of women. That makes it naturally easier to practice spiritual life, being freed from the entanglement of household life. Bhagavatam says, Pumsha stariya mituni bhavam tayo amrito hridaya granti maho. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence based on this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and the female. One becomes attracted to the body, to the home, to the household paraphernalia. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I am mine. But again, one can make tangible advancement in the grihastha ashram, living with wife and children according to religious principles. And the proof, example is higher than precept. What's the example? Well, out of the 12 mahajans, 8 are grihastras. Swayambhu Narada Shambhu Kumara Kapila Manu Pralado Janako Bhishmo Valir Vayasakir Vayam. Another verse we want under our belt. Brahma, Narad, Shiv, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila, Swayambhuvamanu, Palad, Janaka, Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Shukadev, Goswami, and I myself, Yamaraj, know the real religious principles. So Brahma, Shiva, Kapila, Swayambhuvamanu, Prahlad, Janaka, Bali, and Yamaraj. But one has to be a real brahmachari. Just like you have to be a real brahmachari, you have to be a real grihastra, to be a real vanaprastha, you have to be a real sannyasi. And brahmachari doesn't mean just necessarily the saffron dress and just studying the shastra. I mean, it means the sincerity of purpose there. And for the brahmachari, celibacy doesn't just mean not succumbing to the act of sex. It means, for him, it means not mixing with the opposite sex, not talking with women, not thinking of women. But it should be noted that although a brahmachari is naturally adverse to the association of women, and he's not disrespectful to them, because he addresses them as mother. A saintly person actually respects all living entities as spirit souls. And this way a devotee is always a perfect gentleman. Actually, the injunction that there's not intimate association between men and women is not meant to be discriminatory towards the women, because the women are also very happy not to have the intimate association of men, because they also want to advance on the path of Krishna consciousness. They're very happy to remain shy and chaste and do their service. It is the lust in the man's heart that causes him to search out the association of the women. It's not the lady's fault like that. So both the men and women are very happy to follow this Vedic style of life, because it keeps the mind freed from material desire so that we're peaceful, so that we can think of service to the spiritual master, the ultimate goal of service to Radha and Krishna. So we're happy. It's not a discrimination against men. It's not a discrimination against women. Both are at fault as far as the material desires and entanglement in this world. But if someone is searching to become freed from the entanglement, very happy to embrace these regulative principles of freedom. Very happy. So in this way, brahmacharya life is very nice for those who choose that path. Of course, most men do. They marry. And they gradually, and therefore, as far as Gaudiya Vaishnavas are concerned, Narottam says, Grihe Tako Panidako. Whether one's a Tyagi living in the forest, or whether one's a Grihastra living in a big house with, you know, wife and children and naturally furniture and facilities and car, he says, if that person has in his heart the desire to serve the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, give me his association. Therefore, in our ISKCON movement, we see there's so much We do everything together, the brahmacharis, the grihastras, the vanaprasthas. We all do things as a group. We're doing everything together because we understand this principle. One time Prabhupada said, the girls are doing as much service as the girls. The girls are doing as much service as the boys, going out and preaching Krishna consciousness. But within our society, there's rules and the regulations so that we don't become too intimate so as to become distracted. That's the point. And therefore, we should strictly observe the rules and regulations, very strictly. And we should have training programs for those who want to remain brahmachari, for those who want to enter into the grihastha order. The successful grihastras should give training and counsel to the new grihastras. Vanaprasthas, those who are retiring from family life that's coming about now in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The first generation are reaching their 50s, 60s, some of them 70s. So we'll see. It's not necessary that all men take sannyas. It's not that you have to take sannyas in order to continue rendering good service or to go back to Godhead. Of course, we do need a few good men to take sannyas, either from the brahmachari or the grihastha order. But it will be the exception to the rule in Kali Yuga. So therefore, we're looking forward to seeing vanaprastha. It means that husband and wife, the children have grown up, the business has flourished, the money has been put aside to maintain for the next years, and the vanaprasthas remain and continue focusing more and more on preaching in their local area, or traveling and preaching, whatever the case may be. And they can give training, they can give shelter to, because, you know, so many difficulties there in the beginning, often in the grihastha order. I know I have to take care of it as a sannyasi, as a guru. So many letters I get about the difficulties in grihastha ashram, but it would be very appropriate for the vanaprasthas to, who are somewhat renounced, to deal with, help the younger grihastras. And then there's the sannyasis who travel. They also need training when they first come into the sannyasa ashram, because there's Kutichak, Bahudak, Paribhajakacharya, and Paramahans. Not that by becoming sannyasi, putting on the cloth, you're immediately, you know, you're a sannyasi in training, like the training wheels on a bicycle. Before you get on the two-wheeler, you have the four-wheeler. So although the sannyasi has to be at some level of advancement, it's a big step, huge responsibility. And you have to keep making, amongst all the orders, you have to keep making very quick advancement. There's some leniency there, perhaps, in the brahmachari, because they're young. And the grihasthas, of course, Prabhupada said there's some license there. But if you're sannyas, you have very deep. So therefore, the advancement has to be very quick in proportion to the responsibility. So some advanced association is required. Sannyasis, although traveling alone, he's also always searching out the association of his god brothers for deep friendship in Krishna consciousness, and learning and sharing experiences. Prabhupada said when sannyasis come together, they naturally talk about Krishna. So training is required. So those who are considering the brahmachari life, we've got one here, maybe I don't know, maybe some more, our Dina Dayal, let us all wish him well in his brahmachari ashram. You take this class to heart, and we'll give a grihastha ashram class probably sometime during the next week. I've looked at the purports. Grantara Shimad Bhagavatam Aki Shri Prabhupada Aki Shishuvara Gopinath Aki Gaur Premanandi.